Welcome to We Are Libertarians. This is a very special live and on-location episode here at the Tad Talks Ranch. I'm here with the rancher himself, Tad Western. How are you?
I'm doing well, Mr. Spangle. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. And then also joining us is local celebrity Rob Kendall. Granted a day release from his wife
out on parole.
Yeah, that's right. How is Haley?
She is doing great. She's at a bridal shower today.
I love Haley platonically. So we're here at the old Tadster's Ranch. I've never been here. It's quite expansive. I love the Mexican blankets that you buy down in Cancun. You've got those on the windows.
Well, those are for... I put those up for the audio because this room isn't really... We're not recording in the actual studio. This is just out in the living room.
I know. I haven't been given the tour yet, but...
Oh, there's Pappy and May.
We don't have 3 hours to tour the whole ranch, but... God.
Well, if you guys would have came here on time, I could have gave you the entire tour.
We got box trucks outside. We've got a separate garage with...
Did you see the ice skating rink?
Yes.
Yeah, I told you. You guys thought I was bullshitting when I said I had an ice skating rink.
That trim work, honestly, looks a little sketch, though.
Well, you know what? Sometimes we don't build stuff to code around here.
Right, yeah. No.
I mean, yes, we do. We are up on all of our permits, and we have been blessed by the government.
I just realized you have two TVs in here.
Yeah, you know, that's, well, when you're rich and you got money to blow.
Honestly.
Actually, that one doesn't even work. That came out of an RV.
Have you ever seen
a home
like this?
Just hanging up as decoration.
Can we talk about the Indian statue that's in the driveway?
I prefer native.
Right.
That's how I knew I was at the right place. Yeah. I texted Spangle. I said, I think I'm at the right place. There's an Indian in the driveway.
Hey, that thing has been in the driveway. That actually was there before the house was built. They built the ranch around it.
It's like an Indian burial ground we're on or something?
Well, I don't know. Or, yeah.
I have a bone to pick with Rob, by the way.
Uh-oh.
Wow. Get in line.
Could you have parked in a worse position than where you parked?
I did. He was actually parked where you were parked, and I told him, I said, you can pull all the way up in the driveway.
Yeah, so...
And then he proceeded to stop halfway, and I was like, oh, this can be hilarious, because Spangle's going to have to walk through all the... He's going to walk a half mile up through the rain, because it's raining here currently.
He parked in the driveway, and basically there's a car already in it that's... So you've got the two cars at the end of the driveway parked, and then there's nothing but... another car's length back behind them in the garage.
It's a tactical parking position, as if there were going to be some celebrities here.
Right, and you've got the Taurus. Yeah. So I parked over in front of the Taurus. I get out. There's a flood happening here. I immediately sink down into the mud. And then I go back. My shoes are clean.
I'm sorry, Kaepernick, but those Nikes, you were going to throw those away anyway.
I am wearing my Nikes today. And so I had all the equipment in the trunk, so I walk around to the back of the trunk, and there's Noah's Ark floating behind my car. And so I was like, well, I better pull and back out, but... You couldn't have picked a worse parking spot.
In fairness, I tried to park on the side of the street so that you might have the driveway, and Tad told me to pull in the driveway.
That's right.
I did. I planned this all out.
We've got Cory Booker here. Cory?
Ooh.
Kona, his... Tad's dog.
Kona Western.
I'm not interested in touching you. Get off of me.
Tad keeps saying this dog is going to be... Ted keeps saying this dog's going to behave, and I question it.
It's not going to happen. This dog is...
this is good. This is good. The more, hey, listen. The more you ag it on and talk to him, the worse he's going to be. Just ignore him.
It's like he's invited his own Code Pink to the podcast.
You remember how your fathers were to you when you were a child. Just ignore it, and it'll go do its own thing.
Now, you tell me your great-granddaddy literally built this land with his bare hands?
He built the ranch from his with his bare hands from the ground up.
And then there's Sweet Pooh Bear, who is ready to go see heaven.
Hey... She's 15, almost 16. If she makes it to 16, I don't know what I'm going to do.
That's a good dog, though.
Probably put her down.
Yeah. My mom is trying to put down a dog that's 14, Scooby-Doo.
Yeah. Yeah.
And nobody will put her down because there's nothing wrong with her. And she's like, she keeps snipping at everyone. She's going to hurt somebody. She's blind.
Is she going
she's,
blind? That's how yeah. she's going.
Yeah.
I normally don't let her out near the neighbor kids.
All these damn veterinarians with ethics.
Yeah. Well, I got a 9mm and...
Oh, that's poor Roxy.
If your mom needs a quick and easy, painless.
Now, how is this? How is the Tad Ranch zone? Can you discharge a weapon on the Tad Ranch with the government?
I don't really. I see. Well, this being a ranch and being mine, I
pretty much think that I can, under the Constitution, I can discharge any type
You're
of
weapon. You're a regular Cliven Bundy.
I like to, I will discharge arrows more than I will firearms, unless it's the 4th of July.
This place
there's a lot of racket going on.
Now, Tad is a single man.
That's right. Well, for now.
Way cleaner than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. Oh, I am OCD.
What were you expecting?
Well, no, I mean, first of all, it is a standing structure, which I actually pictured it being a teepee of some sort.
Right.
Like a circus tent, maybe.
I actually took down the teepee. I have a summer teepee that I do like to vacation in, back out towards the wood line, but I took it down because...
Teepee.
I naively...
You know, weekend vacation teepee? No. Am I the only one who does that?
I naively, for years, have actually pictured this being a Dallas type ranch.
Yeah,
and then when Tad gave me the address, I said, "That's in the middle of town."
don't give away the secret. I know why it's a lot of property for being in the middle of town.
It's called Radio Rob. Look it up.
Yeah, it's Theater of the Mind, Roberto.
Now, I mean, I think it's the artist rendition of you with the cowboy hat on that really does it for me.
Now, Rob, you are a local talk radio show host, correct?
He's great.
He's a regional. Let's be honest. It's not local.
And if you've ever heard of Chicks on the Right, you are their producer.
I am their producer. I am
now,
also...
Now, do you tell people that? Do you admit that?
Yeah, they've got 1.2 million Facebook followers.
I know. It must have cost them a lot of money.
they hate you so much, by the way.
I know they do.
Like Chris has feuded with my coworkers.
Oh, I believe it.
Openly on the social media.
Yeah. I think they blocked me a long time ago because I just troll people regardless.
Cindy Sheehan, be quiet.
I told them very early on when the first brouhaha took place with you and them and all the libertarian, We Are Libertarian guys got in on it. I said, I just very calmly said, I'm friends with everyone.
Hey, that's the way you need to
And
be.
That's when, you know, rest in peace, Greg was still here. Yeah. And that was he took it to a level that went too far.
Yeah. Old lion lens, rest in peace.
But no, I know they hate me. I don't mind that. And I don't mind that Tony Katz hates me too.
I have told everyone at WIBC that you are a hell of a human being.
Thank you.
And it's ironic because Abdul loves you.
Yeah.
I love you.
Anybody that actually knows me in person knows the shtick.
Hammer and Nigel love you.
Yeah.
But Katz and the chicks, they hate your guts. Like, hate you with a capital hate.
Well, I don't blame them. I mean, I've seen Tony Katz's ratings. They're
you got to go to the ratings.
They're about three quarters too short of where they ought to be.
Now, I'm going
to
be filling in for Tony Katz next week, Monday through Thursday.
You're not their demo.
I'm not their demo. No, which is also why it's mystifying that they have. I'm not going. Listen, I'm not turning the documents over. I'm sorry. Yes, we already declassified that material.
Cory Barker, stop. You are in contempt of Congress.
So
you never know what's going to happen here at the ranch.
But I haven't listened to them in the last 2 years.
So. Well, I'm on there now.
Yeah, which is not great. I mean, no.
Is that great that I'm on there? Or?
I'm saying that
it's an improvement.
It's let's go with that.
Well, I think I bring a little more local perspective to things. I like to talk about local stuff. I don't know if you're aware. I'm currently in a high profile feud with the governor and the governor's office.
You are, yes.
I saw that today. That's pretty impressive.
We talked about that, which you can hear on the Chris Spangle Show episode 2. I replayed the episode of you and I talking about that.
Yeah, you were a guest on the Rob Kendall Show, which you can hear Sundays 1 to 3 on WIBC.
I think you should. Shameless I think you plug. Should listen. Now that I've talked shit, I think you should bring the chicks and I together.
Yeah,
I should be friends with everyone at WIBC but Tony Katz.
I would love that because Tony Katz will not say my name on the air. Did you know about this?
Well, nobody would hear it, Rob. Nobody's listening to that.
He will literally. He literally publicly. This is a week ago, I guess. Said I will never say this person's name on the air ever again.
Wow.
So like,
what's his problem?
He gave you the scarlet letter.
I don't know. Maybe some intimidation. You know, I mean,
that's very common in radio. And I'm being serious. Like, that's very common that the guy that would take your job if you were let go, you don't like that guy.
But I don't want his job.
And in my opinion, you should have it. And he should not have his, even though you'd be my competition from the day job.
Right.
But, you know, I would rather see friends succeed than no talentless hacks.
Well,
but.
So he's out this week, and so, you know, he's got two shows now. The 11-to-1 show as well. And he goes
because they said, why have ratings the rest of the day when we have none in the morning?
And he named everybody to be filling in for him next week. Abdul, Guy Relford, some guy from NRA-TV. And he goes, somebody will be filling in the mornings.
Yeah.
So that's his opinion of me. He will not say my name on the air. So
I know this is all very inside baseball. We're talking about people you guys might not know, but I'm having fun, and that's all that matters.
It is your program. It's your network.
We're going to get into the topics now. Which topic should we get into? There's so much that happened this week. There's the
Burt Reynolds
passing. Let's acknowledge that. Big fan. Tad has the same body hair composition as Burt Reynolds.
I do.
He's sitting on the actual couch that Burt Reynolds.
I did. I bought this couch 3 years ago when I saw him do an interview, and he looked like he had a cane, and his health was failing. So I was like, it's time is to invest now in Burt Reynolds furniture memorabilia. And so he actually signed the underneath one of these pillows.
Yeah, so it's his mashed up.
This actually came with the ranch. And the it's the dog couch. You can't tell.
Now, you wouldn't even
I told you I don't ever live. I don't do anything in my house.
So
there's nothing in my house.
We want to say support Rob Kendall on WIBC. Follow Rob.
God bless you. And Rob M. Kendall on Twitter.
Do not support Tony Katz. In fact, every time you see him online, be antagonistic. Be nice to the chicks until the peace summit, and then if that doesn't go well, you know what to do.
Where would you like to have this at? Because I know you're not a drinker. So
I'll go wherever. I mean, everybody has Perrier water.
You want like a broken egg type or yolk?
I can't do breakfast. I'm busy in the mornings.
What time are you done?
I'm a 9-to-5 employee.
What time does Grizz stop caring about what you do?
Never.
No, 5 years ago?
About 6 months after he hired me. So support Rob and his endeavors, and because he works for the chicks, be nice to the chicks. Tony Katz, our sworn enemy. Now, Tad is also a professional broadcaster. You're now doing Tad Talk every single day.
Yeah, the old TTD, Tad Talk Daily, to call it.
Huge
except
ratings.
Giant. I'm nationwide, and then my reach is expanding back into the Middle East. Like, I don't know why.
Wait, the Middle East?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was huge in Turkey for a while.
He has so many downloads in Turkey.
I don't know why.
1.2 million as of
I don't know if Tad Western is like some type of folk hero that people just download stuff. They don't even know. Maybe it's Russian bots. I don't know.
Well, you're pure Americana.
Well, and I'm a walking joke. Like, just anything I say, funny.
No one embodies the spirit of 1776 like you.
No, I mean, I am a walking firecracker, and I will stick it to the British.
You are what we call rugged masculinity.
Well, thank you. Somebody's got to... Well, now the Burt's gone. You know, somebody's got to carry the torch.
Are you gonna fuck Lonnie Anderson?
I don't know. Yeah.
She's like 100 years old now, dude.
I don't care. I'll hit it.
She was on WKRP, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was the secretary.
That's right. Yeah.
Some secretary.
See, that's the kind of comedy you get every day on Tad Talk, which you can find at WeirdLibertarians.com. But I enjoy listening to it because Tad talks about the issues from a more comedic perspective, and so it is like a congressional hearing. There's a constant growl from dogs right behind you.
Actually, they know how to mind when I'm recording.
I told Tad that I missed the Tad's tip segment.
I do need to get back more into... Back when I was doing a weekly show, I would actually write and prep more and do more of kind of a prepared... I don't know, a lot more prep work.
Yeah.
Now that I'm doing it daily, I kind of just cut out 30 minutes of my time. And I go over, I pretty much just, I'll look up what's going on in the current news and pop culture, and I'll just give my take on it.
Now, Rob, you know all about doing all the prep for a daily show, right?
Oh, yes.
I know. It makes me want to pull my hair out.
I am what we call a freewheeling kind of broadcaster. Spangle has actually recorded my show with me.
You walk in and, like, you know, with We Are Libertarians, and now if you were to come like on a Tuesday show, this is one of the least prepared because I know these two are going to be able to carry it and we'll have a fun conversation.
That's right. I got broad shoulders.
But, you know, when it's like Tuesday, the outline is crazy. And then you show up to Rob, who's on the air, like on a legitimate radio station. He's like, we'll just let's talk about this, and then we don't talk about it. He's like, yeah, they won't remember.
Hey, when that red light comes on, it's just guns blazing. Let's go.
They get on me all the time. My boss, you're like, you're so talented, but man, you got to put a little more prep.
You should listen to We Are Libertarians, and that could be your prep.
I do listen. Well, I do listen to We Are Libertarians.
Now you'll have to listen to the new Chris Spangle show. So Tad and I are now doing a daily show, and it's a totally different muscle because you're much more reactionary. Mm-hmm. You have to prep for stuff that may happen 6 months from now. Like, you can't sit there and be retroactive because you got to go on and talk about it that day, And so you have to already know what's going on, as opposed to kind of being a little more deliberate and learning about stuff.
And half the time when I'm talking about something, I don't know anything about anything anyway. So nothing ever holds up. You know,
you are like the We're Libertarians, Sean Hannity.
I'm still waiting to be waterboarded, but no one, you know.
You're my Tommy Lauren.
Yeah. I'm way sexier than Tommy Lauren. As annoying.
When you go to the We Are Libertarians, the Libertarian Convention, uh-huh. Like you went to a big one in New Orleans recently. Like, do the Libertarians have their Tommy Lauren where it's just like,
yes,
no one can stand you?
Jeffrey Tucker.
Yeah, no, I would be that. I would be.
You
that.
Are?
No, there are definitely levels of celebritarianism. Mm-hmm,
sure.
You know, like at the top is like everybody wants to, you know, Tom Woods stops and a crowd gathers around him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I'm definitely not in that crowd. I was recognized by a lot of people and creep-shotted by some others, but it wasn't like Tom Woods level, for instance. You know, he has like three times the size of the audience that I do. So
he also has a lot of car lots, right?
No, that's Nick Sarwark. Nick's the used car salesman.
I think he's thinking of the
Tom Woods, right?
Toyota.
So oh, yeah.
Yes, here in Central Indiana.
See, that's what we call local humor.
Yeah.
There's
three people who get that joke.
Like, the big namers will stop and talk to you. Like, they seek you out at these things.
Oh, yeah. I've been around long enough that if I run into pretty much anybody that most people in the show would talk, like,
right.
They know who I am because I've been around so long.
Right.
I've been around in the LP for a decade.
Right. So. And you were a Republican.
I was a Republican until 2008.
You were a God-fearing, pro-life human being for a while.
I held a pro-war rally in 2003.
Please tell me there's a photo or a video or something.
Oh, there is. There's a video online.
A video of it. Yeah.
He gave a speech, didn't you?
I gave a speech. Greg Garrison, formerly of WIBC.
Were you and Garrison on stage together?
Oh, he helped me organize it, yeah. He put it together. It was Dan Burton, Steve Bouyer, like these Republican congressmen. The Wright brothers played music. It got 1,000 people in freezing rain the day after Thanksgiving.
Where was this at?
On the Circle.
On downtown Indy?
Yeah, on the Circle. It was freezing that day.
We're going to dedicate a whole segment on the Rob Kendall Show next week to Spangles pro-war rally.
Yeah, I will
beat those war drums.
I will see if I can find it. And anti-war protesters came up on the thing trying to crash it.
Yeah.
And I had security get them right out of there.
So you believed in the Bush man.
Oh, I was the CR president, the College Republican president in 04. I was super pro-war with Iraq. I was very pro-Bush. And then over time, I like that was my final... like I was always very libertarian. Mm-hmm. I almost got kicked out of the presidency of the College Republicans because I didn't care if gays got married or not.
Right.
And I liked Bush's amnesty plan or whatever you called it. Like,
you don't believe in borders.
No, not really. And I've never really seen the reasoning behind keeping people who want to come here and work and provide economic growth to Americans.
Safety is of no concern to you. You hate the safety.
I think that the safety argument is so wildly overblown that it's completely overused, and small incidents that don't reflect the broader numbers are used to demagogue, basically.
I bet Kate Steinle's parents might disagree with that. But carry on.
You're doing exactly what I just said. You literally just illustrated my point, is that people will take an incident like that, and it has nothing to do with the macro evidence that, by and large, it's not immigrants coming in. It's not Europe, right? It's not bringing in 1 million Syrians to a 3 million person country, and it changes everything, like in Sweden, for instance. America can handle it.
By the way, I have a real quick question. I'll throw you off. What happened? How is Larry doing?
Larry's good. See, I'm mad because I shouldn't have stopped the Larry character.
Yeah.
Because Brent Terhune, who I work with at Bob and Tom, came in and basically like stole the thunder and is like getting like 6 million views.
Yeah.
With the same character.
It's the Larry character.
It's literally and I don't think he ever saw it. He may have, but good for him. He's a professional comedian. But now if I bring back Larry, people are going to think I'm copying
Brent. Yeah, you're a hack, dude.
I know, exactly. Meanwhile, I was 2 years ahead of my time. You know?
Yeah.
I was the Andy Kaufman to the Borat.
Yeah.
Nice.
So, and then when I just became completely disillusioned in 2008 with the Republican Party after I saw them remove 300 Ron Paul delegates from the state convention, and I just was like, I'm not going to support these crooks. And but that foreign policy piece was always kind of that missing part that I just couldn't quite get there. And then I saw Ron Paul in the debates, and that was really like oh, wow, I started reading things like Blowback by Chalmers Johnson, right. And I started seeing like, oh, okay, you know, like Noam Chomsky was somebody that I thought was the devil until I actually read Noam Chomsky, and then I was like, oh, all of this makes sense to me.
That's an interesting perspective, too, because your mind was changed on actually reading stuff. Like, you read people that you quote-unquote hated.
Yeah.
And I think that's a good thing.
I was reading Saul Alinsky this morning. And when you read Saul Alinsky and you actually read the book, you go, okay, I completely see all of their tactics, but there's also some of this that really does make sense. Like, he talks about voluntary societies, and like, so there's things in Saul Alinsky that I think even libertarians would go, wow, okay, this is kind of libertarian. But if you just listen to the Glenn Beck version of Saul Alinsky and you never read Saul Alinsky, then you don't see, you know. So, because I wrote an article for We Are Libertarians where I was basically talking about identity politics, in that if you look at how everything is structured in society, crime is down, war is down, famine is down, we're feeding more, we have 7 billion people because we have better healthcare, we have better food systems.
Farm Aid.
Right. And so because there's, and we have
pretty... Dad, you've probably been to Farm Aid, haven't you? Right. You strike me as the sort of man who's been in the front row to Farm Aid.
Oh, you know it.
He performed. He actually he organized the first Farm Aid.
I did have a deal with him.
But he got screwed by Willie Nelson over some weed, and it all went to hell.
Yep, that and Monsanto.
So,
after Bayer bought him.
So, fucking Bear, man. I don't even buy their aspirin anymore as a after what they did to Tad.
I know. They shut me down. Boycott Bear. Hashtag it.
So, in the 50s, you had a large portion of this country that had no access to electricity and extreme poverty, and you had no black voters registered to vote in Mississippi, for instance. So, there's very clear like problems in society, but in an absence of that, like, what do you do? And so what they've done is they've taken the Alinsky model of constantly provoking, provoke, 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 and divide with identity politics, that it just ends up that everybody's fighting with each other all the time. And it's used basically to like move us towards the left by creating these false, like, these false bullshit.
Straw man arguments.
Basically what you just did with immigration, where you take one little incident and you provoke people with it because to get an emotional reaction, which makes them easier to propagandize and then move them to your side, when in reality, immigrants are a net positive for the United States.
You know what I think we ought to do, Tad? I think this would be a good live remote version of We Are Libertarians.
Yeah.
We should let Spangle hang out with a group of MS-13 fellas for an evening.
They would love me.
And he could broadcast live, and we'll see how he feels about the whole illegal immigration people sneaking into the country thing. We'll see.
MS-13 people... All right. How did MS-13 start, Rob?
I don't know, Chris. Why don't you tell me how MS-13 starts?
You know the history there.
See, the way that you're supposed to do it is... Listen, I know. Of course I know.
Oh, no, I'm honest.
But talk to me like
I'm... Oh, no, I'm honest. People know they're always going to get the honesty from me.
MS-13 was formed in California prisons because the drug war locked up a lot of minorities because Nixon couldn't criminalize being black and being a leftist. So he started the drug war to basically put people in prison that were his political enemies. MS-13 grows out of black and white gangs now picking on the Hispanics that are in jail. And then when they serve their time, they get shipped back to Guatemala, where they start forming, you know, terrorist gangs in their home country, which then causes...
Funded by the CIA.
Funded by the CIA, and which we have also disrupted their government and encouraged corruption because of the drug war in their homeland. And then you have family, women's and children's coming up to the border.
Bad hombres is
because,
what I like to call them.
And so American policy... is largely to blame for the rise of MS-13, Rob.
So we are to blame for MS-13. That's your theory.
Not completely.
I mean, how long ago was Nixon president? What was that? Well, that was, 45 years ago? 40 years ago?
Right when a lot of the problems started.
So 45 years ago,
right.
The fact that these people are still out there causing immense terrorism, chopping people's heads off, shipping dangerous shit into this country, that's our fault.
The opioid crisis, for instance, got its start under Bill Clinton. And drug policy then. So
my issue with the whole open borders deal is a issue of what to... I know it's open borders would be, in a libertarian sense, would be great economically, but how does it work? He's pissed. How does it actually work in because you're going to say we're going to open our borders up. But Mexico isn't going to open their borders up. Canada isn't going to open their borders up. So I don't see it being a functional idea that it will actually work.
It's the same as arguing that closed borders should be the policy. Like, you're never going to get
It's not closed borders. Yeah. It's we vet people when they there's a way to do it.
Which is why ultimately I think you allow people to come here and work, and you make it.
I have no problem people who want to come here and work.
Yeah, you decrease black markets by easing drug policy, by easing immigration policy. And
I would be fine with that, but yeah. I think that you have to decriminalize the drugs and then get rid of the majority of the welfare state before you would do that.
But see, that's a total misnomer, because in the welfare reform bill under Clinton, immigrants don't get welfare. You have to be a citizen in this country for 5 years to receive welfare benefits.
Yeah, legally, but you can make a fake ID like the guy who killed Kate Steinle did.
Sure. But that's why you should end the welfare state.
I know. I agree with you.
You can't sit there and say, well, because this one instance happens, this is a justification for the policy for all of the United States. The reality is, the more
should
you
should we go back to a state enforced, let's say maybe just Texas or the southern borders want to enforce, put their National Guard on the border and just...
The less federal government, the better. Than
I would agree
than it is for me.
Look, here's a guy that I know you admire and respect, Dr. Michael Munger.
Mm-hmm, I love Munger,
a great libertarian thinker, friend of the Rob Kendall Show, yes. Mentor of mine.
Right.
He described it as a big wall with a wide gate.
Right.
And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with saying we want all sorts of people to come in here who want to contribute to society. They want to assimilate into our culture.
Sure.
I mean, I don't think that's unreasonable, right? To learn the language and be a part of America. And
it's nothing you have to mandate. It just happens.
Well,
naturally.
But those are the people I want coming in and saying, if we're going to have those people, I'm fine with that. But I don't want dangerous thugs and murderers who are shipping heroin and God knows what into our country.
No, and I don't think any libertarian, including myself, want that either.
Then how are you going to stop it without border enforcement?
You reform drug policy, first and foremost. And the reality is that they're not stopping it now. This is always the argument that when people who argue for more government, they say, well, without these government policies, X wouldn't happen. But with the policies that we have now, which are more entrenched and more and stronger than they were 20 years ago, the Kaylee, what's her name?
Kate Steinle.
Kate Steinle.
I know her death means nothing to you, so it's an inconvenience.
Sorry, that's my dad calling. It's not Kate.
It's not one of your female fans?
No. The reality is
it's not George Soros
that
wanted to make a donation. Open Borders Foundation.
With the most border protections that we've had in American history, drugs are still coming across.
It's true.
Those things are still happening. And so the problem, I'm not a libertarian because I'm selfish or I want to do whatever I want to do. I'm a libertarian because I started out thinking that government was the good thing that all of us can do together to solve problems. And then I've just seen in every single instance, government doesn't work. If you close the borders, you're still not going to stop X from happening. And so why would you rob freedom from all of the good people who want to do things the right way and allow only bad criminals to do what they want to do? Because it's the same. Like, conservatives, I don't think, are very consistent on things like they have it right on gun policy. If you have gun-free zones, only the people with guns are
right.
Protected in that area, like we saw in Jacksonville. But they don't apply that same principle to almost every other area of government. And the principles are always the same. The more the government tries to do, the more ineffective it becomes. And therefore, all those consequences you were trying to stop initially end up falling backwards, and it happens anyways. But good people get hurt in the process.
So is it your assertion then, just so I understand, that we should not have anybody should come and go as they please in America?
Freedom of movement is a foundational libertarian principle, okay? And so I think if
but
you're...
But not U.S. Constitution.
Sure. So there's two ways to look at it when you're a libertarian. There is the pure libertarian point of view, and you have to articulate, this is what true freedom looks like. And then you also have to look at it from that's a destinational libertarian point of view, again, to use a Munger term. And then there's the directional libertarian point of view, which is, I understand that pure freedom of movement, unrestricted borders, so people can leave an area of poor economic growth like Syria and move to the United States where we can have free markets and build a better life for ourselves. That's foundational to what it means to have a libertarian society. But there's also the directional libertarian point of view, which is where are we at now and what is achievable in our lifetime? So I can sit here and I can and I do tell people that open borders are the pure libertarian position. But I also understand we may never see that particular policy prescription in our lifetime. So how do we talk about legislation and things that are happening in the world in a way that convince a Rob Kendall to see our point of view? And so the next generation has a better opportunity to achieve libertarian principles, right? So I don't think that the nation state will cease to exist in my lifetime. And so you have to have some restrictions. So what restrictions am I willing to compromise on? Someone has to be a United States citizen to vote. If you want to participate in our democracy, you have to adhere to our principles. If you want to join our club, you have to believe in the club. I'd like to apply that test to pretty much every American as well. But when it comes to economic growth, if you look at what's happening now where they repealed tax cuts, and so you have a massive amount of investment in companies. And so what's the first thing a company does when they have more money freed up? They hire more people to achieve more big projects so they can make more profit. Profit always comes last. It's not the first thing, like those morons Bernie Sanders tell you. At the same time, the American government is limiting to 66,000 people that we can hire for immigration. So hospitals have shortages, tech companies have shortages, pizza companies have shortages, gas stations have shortages. Like, so at a time when there's more economic opportunity, there's less people available to work because we've stupidly not allowed people to come in here and work. And so then we stall our own economic growth. Like, Trump does things that are so stupid, like the tariffs and limiting immigration, that completely, like, if he didn't have such a protectionist view on those two things, the economic growth would be even more significant, and he'd probably get a third term.
Billionaire Chris Spangle over here telling billionaire Donald Trump how stupid he is. Did you go to the Wharton School of Business? Did you get the best grades?
No, I didn't start off with a small loan of $1 million.
Huge.
Failed out of IUPUI, Rob.
He did pay it back.
You don't genuinely believe Donald Trump is a stupid person, right? I mean, you may disagree with his policies, but you don't get to be a billionaire by being stupid.
No, I don't think he's a dumb person. There's plenty of smart people who are wrong. Like, I don't think that Barack Obama...
Like you?
Thank you. Thank you for calling me smart. Like, I don't think Barack Obama's a stupid person at all. I don't think John McCain was a stupid person. But these people believe stupid things.
No, I would agree with that.
You know, like John McCain, you're a big fan of John McCain, aren't you, Rob?
We love McCain. He was a great American. He served his country admirably.
Now, I haven't heard what you said, but I just kept seeing you show up on WIBC talking smack about John McCain, and I was like, look at Rob having a backbone. What were you saying about John McCain that was really pissing off all the boomers over there at WIBC?
Well, first of all, nobody has a bigger backbone than me.
That's what Haley says. Says huge backbone. Big as that can.
My thing with McCain is that, you know, when this guy dies and everybody starts into, including people who hated him during his life.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It only took, what, 8 years to come over from the other side?
Exactly.
Praise him.
And if George Soros is writing nice things about you after your death, I'm out. I'm out on whatever your life was.
If Henry Kissinger shows up at my funeral, you can go ahead and you guys can talk shit about me.
By the way, I want you to do my eulogy at my funeral, Chris.
I have that on tape.
I would like for you to eulogize me, and you can say whatever you actually thought about me.
Rob Kendall, huge penis. Great man. He's so good. Many women, except between the years, said he was a wonderful lover.
So my thing with McCain is what he did in Vietnam was heroic. I think you can salute that.
I don't think anybody can deny that.
No, yeah. And I think that's okay. But it doesn't mean that you have to say that what he did after his career as a soldier was anything that anybody should be proud of or want to be a part of. That guy was a complete and total scumbag as an elected official. He was totally in it for himself.
Right.
He took great pride in snubbing oftentimes his own constituents to be liked by the media, including his last and final vote, which was that thumbs down on Obamacare after 8 years of campaigning against it.
Because he wanted to grandstand and talk about how the Senate used to be great and how he the whole whitewashing of John McCain over the last year has been unbelievable to watch. Like, here's a guy who walked around and abused the press, called his wife the C word, was the original madman in 2008. People were saying, we've got to elect Barack Obama because John McCain's a crazy person with temperament issues. We're going to get into a war if he gets elected.
Well, he was the original racist candidate, too.
Exactly. You remember when he pointed at Obama in the debates and said that one, and then it turned out, you know, all of a sudden John McCain was a massive racist, according to the
what's his name,
press.
Who marched in the march with King, remember? He called him out. He's most despicable
John candidate. Lewis.
Yeah, John Lewis did.
Yeah,
and then he tweeted out, he was a great, great American citizen.
And so
he brought us together.
Yeah, the whitewashing of all of this. Like, here's, you know, Biden, who's saying, they're going to put you all back in chains 8 years before, now saying, he was my best friend and represented the best in American politics. Okay, so the best in American politics is them putting him back in chains, the black people in chains. Like, all of it is just bullshit. And this is everything that everybody hates about politics. What took place last weekend? It's like, we're not going to talk about Aretha Franklin's life. We're going to talk about Donald Trump.
Right.
And we're not going to talk about John McCain's finer points. We're going to pretend that none of the bad stuff happened. Mm-hmm. You know, and he himself excuses all of his bad behavior by saying, I wasn't perfect. It's like, okay, well, that doesn't excuse all of the millions of people that died because of your foreign policy. So initially I was like, you know, and I'm not going to talk bad about the guy. But then I watched the week, and the week that he designed for himself.
Isn't that the height of it all, right? That he scripted his funeral to the T?
Yeah,
political funerals echo through history. And political funerals of men like John McCain in their era have a chance of being remembered hundreds of years later. And you chose your funeral to be used to make cheap political points in a very small amount of, like, small period of time of human history.
And wasn't that whole attendance, like, you look at who was there, it was Obama, it was the Bushes, it was the Clintons, it's like the freaking cabal.
It's the machine, man.
Yeah,
it's the Washington machine.
Somebody tweeted out, just lock the doors and have a war crimes trial.
Yeah.
I mean, it's true. It just, and so, you know, by the way, you'll love this. The day, so I had to go in the air the next day, after McCain dies.
Right.
And WIBC, I guess Fox News, had this special prepared for quite a while that, hey, radio stations can use this once McCain passes away, as it's common that they'll do with well-known people when it looks like they're going to die. And so they were running the John McCain special after my show. And at like 11 at night, I get a text from my boss. Hey, kind of maybe take it just a little easy on McCain on Sunday, since you're running into a John McCain special. I said, okay, but Monday, Katie barred the door. I think you could salute John McCain's service as a soldier and say that was service above self, but his life as an elected official from the Keating Five on forward was all about self above service.
Yeah, the Keating Five, where he used his Senate influence to get a big donor out of trouble in the savings and loan scandals in the 80s. You know, Keating was this big contractor in Arizona who funded Arizona politics. You know, it's the height of corruption. And of course, you know, the Senate tried him and he was found to have done some inappropriate things, but nothing ultimately was wrong. But Cory Barker over here is trying to get him
He's
my
thirsty.
Water. Yeah, go get your own water, bro. So
you're no Bruce Kendall when it comes right down
listen,
to it.
Listen, always trying to steal another man's water, just like a Democrat.
He's just happy that we've got some company today at the ranch.
Yeah, no, that's it's.
He's
it's,
not a big McCain fan either.
I don't blame you. I bet he kicked dogs. Let's start that rumor.
And by the way, your daughter, to have your daughter up there,
Kona,
saying those sort of things.
Yeah,
it's like, if my, you know, you would want your child to only remember.
That's pepperoni, by the way. Hormel pepperoni. This dog must have the worst farts.
Oh, you wouldn't even believe. You won't believe the gas.
But I mean, to have your daughter up there spewing that stuff, and it's like, Donald Trump doesn't give two shits about what you say about
right.
him, because he's the president and you're dead, dude.
Right.
So you just keep talking and he's going to keep laughing.
What about appealing to the American people's morality as a way to thwart Donald Trump? Has that worked in the last 3 years? It's never worked. It's not worked for Lil Marco Rubio. It's not worked for Jeb Bush. It's not worked for Ted Cruz. It's not worked for Hillary Clinton. It's not worked for any Democrat that's been prominent that's tried to go against him. Like, appealing to people's higher natures, saying this isn't who we are and we need to be better, like, that hasn't worked. So why do they keep doing that?
Because they're preaching to the choir. They think that that is what people want, and that's their only plan. They have no idea how to deal with Donald Trump.
And they believe it, right? I mean, you look at, it's interesting when we talk about who was the writer of the New York Times.
I'm being humped. Okay, I'm being humped.
Kona.
Is this a We Are Libertarians first?
No.
Kona.
You being humped while on the air?
There was a time where Creighton got real amped up on an antihistamines. And
put your sausage away. Maybe you won't.
Yeah, I guess he thinks it's a little sausage.
Yeah, he thinks it's a pepperoni.
That's your turn, Rob.
you look at these people and you look at who was the writer of this anonymous New York Times piece. And I keep telling people, because, you know, part of the joke on the air
is, it's not a New York Times.
Yeah.
Is
Rob over here blaming the entire New York Times as if they wrote the piece, which they basically
they may very well have. But I keep telling people, I said, while we laugh about, oh, Mike Pence did it, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it's someone around Mike Pence, because most of those people were so never Trumper until there was a job waiting for him in Washington, and all of a sudden they're on the Trump train. That's who's in our government. These people think they're the smartest people in every room. They despise people who voted for Trump. They look down upon them, and that's that group of people: the Bushes, the Obamas, the Clintons, the McCains. They genuinely think they're better than these people.
And they know better. They think they know better and how the country should run, and they don't give a damn about the voters.
Yeah, I mean, it's Pence. You know, you worked for Mike Pence for a brief time.
We used to be friends.
Yes, and Mike Pence, a talk radio guy here in Indiana as well. You occupying his seat. You literally sit in the chair
literally sit in his seat.
The Mike Pence used to sit in. Big time friend of the station that you work for. And, you know, but Pence was one of those guys. Pence was number three in the House. You don't become number three in the House and help write the Patriot Act, which he bragged about on his website in 2008. Mysteriously, you can only find it on screenshots that I've saved. But, you know, Mike Pence is somebody that super ambitious and is willing to do whatever it takes to become, you know, he ran for governor to be president, and he put a team in Iowa roughly 6 months after he got elected governor here, and it wasn't until RFRA blew up in his face that he wasn't able to go and, you know, the Religious Freedom Act, that he wasn't able to go and run for president.
Can you imagine what Trump would have done to him on a stage?
Oh, he would have torn him apart. Pence is, you know, I ran a campaign against Pence. Pence is one of the most disciplined politicians I've ever seen, but everything he says is a platitude written by some Hollywood writer.
Yeah.
About what people think. What, you know, I just believe in Indiana. This is just the best people in all of the United States, and we achieve greatness together, not because of the government, but because of the human spirit.
Lodestar.
You know, and it's like, I'm just a humble servant. And it's like, you know, the guy does believe what he says. The guy doesn't cheat on his wife. The guy is, you know, truly that Christian, although he's not a Christian supremacist. You know, he's not a wacko. He's just a traditional 1990s conservative Republican Christian guy, and that's who he is, you know. And so the left trying to make him into some boogeyman is insane to me, because it's going to backfire and make Pence more beloved. But Pence is also not a bright person.
No,
he's not a smart person.
And that's where Pence and I got sideways. I worked for his campaign, and, you know, I went to work for state auditor's office, and they promoted me to pharmacy board director. And you find out very quickly, which is under the governor's office, you find out very quickly, one, he's not very bright, and two, he's more interested in surrounding himself with people that worship him than people that are good at their jobs. They're not really about government reform. He doesn't really know how to reform government.
Hence, your job is something pharmacy related.
Well, one of the reasons I left was I kept hitting my head against the wall, because we were doing things better, but we weren't doing it, quote, the right way.
Right.
Because it wasn't the government way, but our results are better.
Right.
We're doing more for taxpayers. We're doing what we're supposed to do. No, it's not how it's supposed to be done.
Yeah.
And I said, I can't in good conscience continue to take money, realizing I'm just a guy showing up, because you're not really about reform.
Right.
You are about going to ribbon cuttings. You are about giving speeches. And that's why I've been so critical of Mike Pence, that he gives a great speech. He's actually a really nice guy. He's a phenomenal orator.
Yeah.
But he has no idea what he's doing.
Yeah, he would have been ripped to shreds by Donald Trump. I mean, he will be at some point. There's no doubt that his time
Guantanamo's in his future.
Yeah, there's no
if
doubt.
He actually wrote that.
I don't think he did.
No, I think it was probably his speech writer.
You did some deep research.
Oh, yeah. You know, I went down the deep interwebs, and there was quite a few people.
What's the black web saying?
Well, they prefer to be called the African-American web, but here at the ranch, we're more progressive. But apparently, they were talking about how it could be his speechwriter. Obviously, that's because the wording could be... I don't believe it's probably any... I think it's probably some low-level hack, because if you actually read the... I don't know if you have it handy, but I read it, and I was like, this is complete fan fiction of somebody who... It's just grandstanding, and it literally reads like a leftist wrote it, and I don't know. It doesn't make any sense, and it pretty much says, like, we want to keep... It's admitting to a deep state actually running the government instead of elected officials, and I don't know. It's just weird.
I read the entire thing, and I gave an annotation on it on the Chris Spangle show, so if people want to get deeper into it, then go check out that episode.
Cory Barker, be quiet.
Order. Hey, you want pepperoni? Go over there. Go.
So Tad's going to be a great parent someday.
He's going to be the best dad.
You know, I was with some friends last night, and one of them had a small child, and it had a ball. It was playing with it, and I almost kicked the ball to the child, and I was like, go get it. Go fetch. Because all I have is dogs. And
So Jennifer Palmieri, who was an Obama comms director, she worked in the White House. And so, you know, somebody who was the comms director for Barack Obama at the White House understands this stuff and was with the other party. And this is what she wrote. For what it's worth, based on my experience with New York Times sourcing rules for administration officials, this person could easily be someone most of us have never heard and more junior than you'd expect, like a deputy at Legislative Affairs or the National Education Council. You know, and I think that's probably
right. It could
be
someone appointed by Obama still in office.
Yeah. Right.
Literally.
So I don't believe that this is going to be Mike Pence or, you know, Jeff Sessions or any of that kind. I think it's
I want
be,
it to be Mike Pence.
I want the more drama, the better, honestly. Like,
can you imagine if it really was Mike Pence?
If we're not getting good government, well, then we might as well get good television.
Hey, reality TV government is the best government.
This dog is literally trying to bite Tad.
This is why I don't...
There's no pepperonis left, so he's biting my fingers because they smell like pepperoni.
We don't have this at the We're Libertarians home studio.
No, and I put the cats away even now.
I'm kind of pissed you did not bring the live stream equipment so we could be enjoying this on Facebook.
It would be funny, yeah.
If we're still not banned.
Did you literally have a woman come over to the We're Libertarians podcast
studio? I did,
yeah. And you had to explain to her that...
She made it clear that she does not like surprises.
Oh.
Of any variety. I was like, well...
Did you meet her on, like, the Bumble or something like
that? No, slid in the DMs.
The Bumble.
This is a person that just caught my attention on Twitter, and so,
okay.
You know, worked my way in there.
Right.
Was it their witty banter?
It was. There was a lot of witty banter. had a great time. Then we went out. Have not heard from her since.
You're getting ghosted, son.
I am getting ghosted. I'm about to write a strongly worded text message to her.
Wow. You should write an op-ed for the New York Times.
I should. You're right.
About how you're a male feminist. And
that's right.
You shouldn't be treated
this
way.
It's like you spend $70 on dinner. You have a wonderful time.
Wow.
Well, I have podcast money.
Well, yeah.
And then you don't hear from them. It's so rude. It's just, it's not easy being a
Where
man,
Where did
Rob.
You go for a $70 dinner?
Iaria's. Have you ever been to Iaria's Italian?
Yeah. I don't think so.
That's how I liked this girl. I didn't take her to Qdoba. Normally, if you go on a first date, you go to, like, Starbucks. Because, like...
Is that how it works?
Oh, yeah. No. So, if you're going on a date with somebody and you're not sure, you don't get full dinner.
Uh-huh.
Because then you can go, you know,
Yeah.
You know, but...
You just break it off quick.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Hit the exit.
I usually know just through conversation. I'm a catch.
Yeah.
So
you're famous.
I try to be picky.
You work for, the arguably still the most popular radio show in the country.
Not arguably. The ratings prove it.
In the world,
I've seen my ratings and your ratings, and yes, we are the most popular show.
Real quick, I'm curious. $70 just sounds like a lot of money to spend on a dinner.
Maybe
for a first date. For a first date. I mean, I feel like you
that's
have
a lot
regret.
Of calamari.
I'm not happy about it.
How much food did you guys eat for $70?
I had a normal amount of food. I ordered an appetizer, and she had a few drinks, which is necessary to be around me.
Right. But you don't drink. See, that's part of your problem.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I feel like that would... Because, see, if you drank, you could just go have a drink with her.
It's genuinely cost me dates. Like, it is... It's a weird thing when they find out... Because it always comes up before you even meet them. Like, it's like one of the first 20 questions you get asked. It's like, do you drink?
Really?
And so... And I don't. And so they're like, eh.
Really?
All right. Well, fine. I don't need my kid being codependent because of your alcoholism.
That's
so
really
fine.
Interesting. So women will literally sometimes not go out with you because you don't drink.
It doesn't happen as much now because as a man in my mid-30s, mm-hmm. Women in their mid-30s, mm-hmm. Oh, you have a job. Okay. Cool. Yeah, I'll go out with you. But in your 20s, it was much more important. You know, you remember Broad Ripple.
Oh,
Rob.
Broad Ripple Rob. Yeah. Rest in peace.
Right. Are you still the mayor of Broad Ripple?
Yeah.
We had that going for a good 3 years. That was a well-versed skit we had at Brothers and Kilroy's. The mayor of Broad Ripple. Yes.
Skit.
I did shots with the mayor of Broad Ripple last night.
I'm friends with the mayor of Broad Ripple on Facebook.
I literally saw Tad say that one time that he was the mayor of Broad Ripple.
I did.
In a bar, and these two girls, they were probably 20, 21. Well, they were 21 because they were in the bar.
Let's hope they were of age.
Yeah. And so, unless they bought a fake ID from your friendly neighborhood illegal. But,
I've ran into 19-year-olds and 16-year-olds in bars before.
Are you really the mayor of Broad Ripple? Yeah. Yeah, I won my campaign in 2009. Oh my God, that's so cool. What? No, just because, listen.
Hey, pepperoni face,
Kona,
get over here.
Kona, I will punch you in the face.
You're really killing our buzz here.
I'm gonna punch you in the face.
All right, you need to go garage? That's right. Calm down.
Literally calm. Like... Listen, Kamala Harris, stop it.
Order.
Rob, how's your life?
It's going okay. It's going all right.
What was I talking about before the $70 dinner got us derailed?
We were speaking on, there was John McCain, there was, the White House, the news story from the
leaker, yeah, who it might be.
Kona.
I forget.
We definitely need, she's trying to destroy my Nike. She's yeah, this not a is, Colin Kaepernick fan.
This is an Adidas house now.
Now, Rob, are you fully on board on the anti-Nike train? Are you anti? Now, the average age for your radio station is 78. And so do you have to, like, be anti-Nike just to, you know?
My stance on Nike is I will not buy any new Nike stuff as long as Kaepernick is a spokesperson, but I will not burn anything.
Right.
I will continue to wear what I own.
See, that's smart.
You're rational.
Because he's not going to be a spokesman in 6 months, and then he can go back to buying Nikes.
I'm not punishing myself. Like, all I'm doing is punishing myself if I don't wear the Nike stuff.
Right.
I've already bought it.
Right.
It's like the people who tore up their season tickets last year to the NFL. You've already paid the money.
Why?
Yeah, it's not a boycott if you've already given them your money.
Why do boomers care so much about that?
Well, have you seen their footwear?
No, I'm just saying, like, why? Like, my dad told me the other day, and I probably shouldn't say this on the air, but my dad told me, he was like, I moved my season tickets, I had one of these seats forever, and then there was a black guy next to me, and he put his fingers in his ears during the national anthem, so I moved seats. And I go, really? Like,
now, was it for the flyover? Because I can understand that. When the stealth bomber flies over,
he
breaks a sound barrier.
He could have had hearing problems, but no, he said it was very clearly in protest of the national anthem. Which is very, like, a very stupid thing to do, like, but, you know, either way, like, I guess I don't get why people really care why,
Did he get better seats?
Yeah,
then why are you bitching? Yeah.
But my point is, maybe Rob can explain boomers to us, because I just don't care if you care or don't care about the national anthem.
Well, and that's the point, right, is that the stuff like Mike Pence did when he came and walked out and cost taxpayers all that money and everything else.
The prearranged stunt.
Yeah. Right, yeah. That stuff's ridiculous. I don't have any problem with people saying, I don't want to engage in commerce with you because I disagree with your political views, right? It's why Michael Jordan never talked politics for all those years. You're a salesperson, whatever you're in, whether it's We Are Libertarians or, you know, Nike or whatever. You're selling stuff. You're selling a product. And you probably realize that your views may turn some people off and they're not going to listen, but you have an audience.
But what happens when politicizing helps you sell? Like, that's part of the problem is that...
That's a free market, baby.
Yeah. Yep.
It's manufactured yep. outrage, really. And then Nike, trust me, Nike crunched so many numbers, they realized these assholes who are going to boycott us yep. aren't buying our products anyway.
It doesn't matter.
So, and we're going to get $10 billion worth of free advertising over the next yep. month. So, I mean, it's all calculated.
The guys that are kneeling, too, are not the lead players in the NFL. Colin Kaepernick's not out of the league because he kneeled. He's out of the league because he wasn't very good, and as good as he was is not worth the drama that comes with it.
Well, same thing with Tebow. He was going to be too much. He was going to be more of a liability than anything else for a team.
Yeah.
Even if they were going to sign him.
I mean, there you can find 100 guys that are as good as Colin Kaepernick out there as a backup quarterback.
Now, there is a case, I was reading that in his case, they are trying to say that owners were colluding team-wise yeah, but then against him.
But then you have John Elway saying that they would have hired him and he turned him down.
Yeah, I know. I'm just telling you what I read.
It's like those people that...
I don't have a problem with it either way. I don't...
He thinks he's better than he is, yeah. right? He thinks he should be a starter. You're not starter good. You got benched for Alex Smith, not because you knelt. You knelt after you got benched.
He sat on the bench initially.
Yeah, exactly.
And pouted during the national anthem.
You're not that good. You're an okay
backup
quarterback.
Well, he was originally catching shit for sitting, and then one I believe it was a Marine or somebody told him, why don't you kneel for the national anthem or something? They'd show a little bit more respect, but I don't... To me, it's just all a bunch of...
I respect anybody's right to boycott anything, but if you're tearing up stuff you already own, that you've already bought, that they already have your money...
The best was when people were cutting their Nikes off their socks. I was like, who in the hell are you... Nobody cares what socks you're wearing.
It's virtue signaling. Oh, let's call it what it is. It's the same dumb behavior that we see from these Code Pink people screaming in the middle of a hearing. Like Linda Sarsour screaming at the beginning of a congressional hearing does nothing but make Linda Sarsour feel good.
Right.
Which is hilarious because Linda Sarsour, the Muslim activist, the progressive, acted worse than Alex Jones at Congress. And Alex Jones got banned from Twitter for just doing what Jim Acosta does by shouting at Jack Dorsey.
But I miss Jones.
But I do too. I rest in peace.
I love his moobs.
Hey, those are super male vitality pecs. Those aren't moves.
Now, do you watch Alex Jones at all?
I watch him for humor. Yes, right. I enjoy people who are able to trigger a response from other people in a positive manner.
Yeah,
and I think the man is insane, but yet he has a very loyal following who live off what he says.
Yeah,
and that's interesting to me.
Yeah. It's sort of the cult-like figure you're trying to be.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Somebody yesterday compared me to both Alex Jones and Donald Trump in the same day, so I decided I didn't know whether I should be offended or happy.
So when are the Robipure water filters coming out?
Oh, my God. Right. If I had Alex Jones sort of money, I'd gladly play an unhinged character on
the
radio.
He started in a small closet on a public access TV station. Now he's got 60 employees.
I mean, it's something to be able to say that you can create a character, which that's what he's done.
Yeah.
I don't think Jones is actually as unhinged as he plays. I think he's a marketer and a provocateur. Yeah. And you can get people to respond to absolutely crazy stuff. That said, I think the shit with Rubio the other day was awesome.
What?
I loved that you'll walk up to a senator and call him a frat boy, and go back to your bathhouse.
Bathhouse, yep.
You know, because Rubio's trying, with all these armed guards around him, trying to be a big tough guy, going, I'll take care of myself. You know, if he got the drop on Rubio, those dudes would shoot to kill.
Oh, yeah.
So...
He was never putting anyone in any danger. He was doing what I've seen, you and I have both seen press people do it a million times, aggressively ask a question of a public official because they feel it's their right. Because I'm the guardian of democracy, I can treat politicians however I want, and then I can justify it with the First Amendment. It's like, you know, but then they don't afford that to Alex Jones, who is just as much of a journalist, in my opinion, as, you know, somebody who, a CNN reporter.
Well, and for Rubio to say, oh, I don't know who you are, bullshit. You absolutely know who Alex Jones is.
Rubio was lying through his teeth.
And once you start lying, then it's all fair game.
Right.
So.
I thought it was hilarious. And then, you know, Jones just starts yelling, I never said I would hurt anybody. And then, so for Twitter to ban him over that, I just thought was ridiculous. Apple just banned his app from the App Store, and Google will do the same. I look at it all, and I just don't get, I have watched Alex Jones since Donald Trump won, because when Trump won, I was like, okay, I'm going to take a look at these elements of the internet and of media that I ignored because I didn't want to dip my toe in that water, because I wanted to see what those people who elected Donald Trump were watching. And I find Alex Jones to be somebody that is, yeah, he's a, I mean, coming from a background of talk radio, you and I both know exactly what he's doing and how good he is at it.
He's brilliant.
Yeah, an actor he
is. He's exposing the globalists.
That's right. I mean, I think he genuinely believes this stuff, but like when he's sitting there with Owen Schroyer going, "That's racist!" and then doing bits.
Racist!
Like the other day when they're talking about Brian Stelter, and they have a picture of Brian Stelter talking on the screen. They're like,
I'm just mad because Alex Jones is more popular than me and has family that loves him.
He's being funny. Like, he's trying to put his information in a way that is going to grab attention, because in the modern media era, the only way to get attention for your brand
is memes.
Is bad behavior, to be honest.
You know, when I fell in love with Alex Jones was when he did the Megyn Kelly thing. and she, like, he perceived that she turned on him, and he did that big response, and he goes, oh, she was saying, oh, I'm obsessed with you. And then he says something like, I want to go have steaks with you.
Yeah.
And the idea that Megyn Kelly would be looking at this guy going, yeah, I want to go have some steaks with you.
I mean, they're just smell like sulfur. She's sitting there and just wants to have steaks with me.
I love the blowhards.
Right.
I love the people who just rattle people to their core, and Jones is that. But why do they keep banning these people? If you don't want to consume Alex Jones information, don't consume it.
At what point was it socially acceptable to share an InfoWars article on your social media to begin with?
Exactly.
Like, at what point did you share something and not get the response of InfoWars, really? Like, there was, you know, all they have done is they've poured gasoline on his fire.
Yep.
And made him more popular.
Because he'll find something. And for me, it's like, I used to casually watch him, but now I really actually take an interest in him because I almost feel bad for him.
He's a martyr. Yeah. He's kind of became the story, which is hilarious. Yeah.
Because where does it end, right? I mean, eventually it's that, you know, that old saying, nobody did anything, and, you know, because they didn't affect me until they came for me. You know, I'm paraphrasing a very famous quotation there. But when do they come for people on mainstream radio? You know, where does it end? Alex Jones has the right to be a psycho and be wrong as long as he doesn't hurt anybody.
And that's the issue I take with the websites banning them, is they just pull out some nonsense clause that, oh, well, you violated our hate speech, or you are aggressive, and you're threatening, or this is a video of violence or whatever. And it's like, what the hell are you talking about? Because he asked somebody a question, like, what?
I was saying
he was calling for violence, and he was like, it's a call to arms if they impeach the president. Like, what?
You literally watch. And so I've broken down the 10 steps.
Which was brilliant, by the
way. Thank you. And I've broken down the 10 steps that they take, because now they're doing it to Joe Rogan. So after the Elon Musk thing, you get successful.
Horses.
You build a brand, and then you get popular enough to have a moment that becomes kind of like a cultural meme, like the Elon Musk interview. And then all of a sudden, then they turn their attention towards you.
Yep.
And so, you know, this is the, like, we're at step one for Rogan.
Is this our cultural moment?
Yeah, hopefully.
Will we be banned?
All right. A millennial liberal blogger posts a dishonest representation of a media personality. And if you listen to the episode 16 of the Chris Spangle Show, I break down this article that Motherboard wrote, a Vice product, wrote about that interview and how dishonest. And basically, it just comes down to, this person is mad that Joe Rogan is white and saying things that he disagrees with, and he wants to shut him down.
Well, build a platform then, dickhead.
That's right. Number two, other liberal bloggers tweet or reblog the piece echoing the falsehoods. Number three, Media Matters begins monitoring the personality. They take past and future statements out of context. Because Media Matters is show prep for the liberal media, newspapers...
David Brock.
At step four, newspapers report on the personality's out-of-context statements under the guise of a danger to democracy. Number five, op-ed writers and cable news talking heads debate the morality of the out-of-context false comments. This debate spills over to social media and becomes totally detached from the original context. The repetition makes it true to the majority of people. This is where Jordan Peterson is, by the way. Step six, Journalists begin asking public figures if it is appropriate to appear on the program using social proof to make it seem dangerous or wrong, even though they never really, like, explain why. It's just asking in a negative way, is it appropriate for you to appear on that program? Makes it seem bad. It's a very sadistic trick. CEOs of social platforms are asked to denounce the media figure. This makes company lawyers, shareholders, and vain CEOs panic over the bad press. Number 7, wait for the most convenient controversy to be created by the system to justify the removal of a media figure, such as Alex Jones when he said something about battle rifles. They took it out of context, and that was the catalyst. Number 8, it is at this point that the figure is abandoned by employers, sponsors, corporations, allies, and friends that aren't willing to be subjected to the appearance of support for whatever fake hate speech or violence that the narrative pushes. The chilling effect causes members of the media figure's echo chamber to self-censor. Number 9, the population has been so thoroughly propagandized that they don't protest the action, which encourages the censors to move on to the next victim. The system at step 10 is then applied to an ever-increasing amount of figures that politically disagree with the network of liberal writers at clickbait mills like Mediaite, HuffPo, Raw Story, and BuzzFeed. That is episode 16 show notes for the Chris Spangle Show.
I thought, you know, and I bust your balls all the time, but I read that and I thought that is so well put together.
Thank you.
I really thought that was really well orchestrated on how it all works.
Yeah, it's the pattern,
right?
And we're going to see it applied to Joe Rogan. We've seen it applied to Jordan Peterson. You know, people report on Jordan Peterson and say absolute nonsensical things in the New York Times. And then, you know, people send me notes like when I say some nice things about Jordan Peterson, they post that article. And I go, you've clearly never listened to Jordan Peterson because you would know how ridiculous this is. And I hear that about Alex Jones. It's like, I don't want to defend what the guy says or does, but when people in power in media and government and politics start telling me what I cannot think or read or listen to, I start to question that because I don't know what Alex Jones said or did around Sandy Hook, and I bet most people don't. I doubt most people saw the original context of what Alex Jones said about Sandy
Hook.
Now,
wait a second. He told Rubio he's bigger than Limbaugh. 20 million listeners. He told Rubio he's bigger than Limbaugh.
I think he gets like 50 million, actually.
Honestly, I would bet you that he's probably more culturally relevant at this point.
You think that many? Are they people like me who are like this guy's a clown? And yeah. I enjoy him.
Yeah.
From a humor standpoint,
I would bet you that's 50% of his audience. But I bet you his cum in our business, total amount of people that consume your content. Alex Jones puts his stuff on so many different things, and in so many different platforms that his content is consumed by so many more people than a traditional single source radio program like Rush Limbaugh. I don't think Limbaugh has nearly the political relevance or cultural relevance that he once did. And I think that Alex Jones probably has more juice than Rush at this point.
Yeah, and that's the thing, right? I mean
your station dropped that. You guys dropped Rush Limbaugh.
Yeah, yeah. And because
of bad ratings.
I mean, it's just fascinating to me that we have now we're removing people's right to say things that they're very clearly not endangering anyone.
Right.
If the phrase call to arms is now hate speech, well, then
it's
the reporting on what was going on and the interpretation from that reporting. It's almost like a game of telephone and we're going to ban someone because someone said, oh my God, he's calling for the assassination of anyone who talks bad about Trump or something. It's like, what are you talking? How do you get that from this? How do you get three steps removed from this?
And because then people don't click and read articles.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's all headline clickbait bullshit.
Right. So nobody's actually going to go out and search and watch the original 30 minutes of programming.
When you can't now.
Five years ago. Yeah. When Alex Jones talked about
paper trail.
Like, I have never seen any even like video clips of Alex Jones talking about Sandy Hook or the families. Like, what did he say?
Right.
What did he actually talk about caused the harassment?
Why does it matter?
Right. I know one of the original things he was saying was that Anderson Cooper wasn't there and he was green screened. And that was what he was calling fake. And then they took that to say that he said all Sandy Hook was fake. And then there were articles of him, or there was him playing devil's advocate with other people who had theories of what was going on.
Right.
And then they were taking his devil's advocate things that he was quoting in that and taking that out of context. So there was all kinds of mismatch.
How many people on a daily basis are harmed or bummed out or mentally and emotionally distressed by something someone says in the mainstream media?
Billions.
Like, I understand the grief that these families must feel, because I can't imagine what a horrible tragedy that would be. But, like,
You have legal ways of going about that.
Right.
If you can document it and something's actually, you can prove damages, go to fucking court.
There's already legal remedies for it.
And Twitter is not getting sued because Alex Jones is tweeting about Anderson Cooper's nose is falling off in a video at Sandy Hook. They're not liable for that.
They literally can't be because of Section 230.
I know. So why are they banning him? Because now it violates our hate speech clause. It makes no sense.
Because at the
they want it both ways.
They want to be regulated so they can hold their position. Because this is what always happens. Start a company.
Yeah.
You grow that company into a near monopoly. The public,
they become the
usually
gatekeepers.
Leftists usually end up getting mad at that company. So then politicians seek favor by trying to regulate that company. The company works with the regulators to craft the legislation that maintains their position in the marketplace, and F anybody else who wants to start. Like, it's why you can't start a telephone company. It's why you can't start a competitor to GE. You can't start a competitor to the NFL, even.
Yep.
You know, I mean, because they have worked with legislators to craft a place that keeps them safe. And in Silicon Valley, with the high turnover rate, of course, Twitter and Facebook wants to be regulated.
Yep.
Because it keeps them in business.
The system is totally rigged against the average person. And that's the one message why Trump was so popular. Is I'm not saying he had the answers to fix it. I don't think one person can fix it. But he is right. The system is rigged against the average person.
Yeah, he rang that bell in every campaign stop.
Yep.
And the press is willing to participate in it because, you know, Rob, we've worked in media forever.
We've done so well.
The Indianapolis Star is,
you know, huge. I can't believe I got you both at the table.
Like the paper is so thin now, and it's because all of their advertising went to independent media or to social media specifically, or to places like Craigslist, and so all their revenue was erased because of social media advertising. And they, you know, I heard a Philadelphia Inquirer publisher talk on the Michael Smirkanis show, where he basically said they were getting on their website $30 per thousand. Now they're getting $1. And it's because Facebook came in with better targeting tools and then stole all their online business. And they can't compete because their overhead cost of delivery and printing are so much bigger than other forms of media. And they have, you know, Sean Hannity has 3 million viewers, but none of the overhead. And they have 800,000 in distribution and all this extra overhead. And so they're mad at cable news. They're mad at social media. They're mad at all these independent media outlets because they're having to compete for dollars and for attention. And so whenever a convenient excuse like the Russia narrative can be created to destroy their competition, they're going to do it. And so you shouldn't listen to people when they say, you know, Alex Jones needs to be silenced, because Alex Jones is doing nothing different than Abby Martin, Democracy Now, or any of these other people on the left are doing, the Young Turks. He has his own media outlet that speaks to his people, and if you don't like it, you don't have to listen. Plain and simple. Hide him on Facebook. Don't like his page. Like, there's remedies to not seeing Alex Jones, but people want to control what other people think. It's like the height of craziness that an adult thinks that they should control what goes in the ears of another person.
I don't like anything going in my ears that is unwanted. The occasional Q-tip after a shower is fine, but...
Is that the town marshal out there? I thought I heard a siren. The ranch, coming to the ranch.
Yeah, you know, we could be the government shutting us down. This isn't live, is it?
God, I hope not. So many.
So much edit.
So many things to edit out.
Well, how do you feel about Facebook teaming up with, like, preferred news sources and vetting them, like CNN, I know, is doing things with Anderson, trying to push Anderson Cooper.
Well, that's what they'll eventually do, right?
They're trying to merge, aren't they, and then just control because no one reads newspapers or watches TV anymore. They get their news from Facebook.
Yeah.
So then CNN, they try to do a deal where they corner the market.
People want to... these companies, if I were...
I don't think anybody's going to watch it anyway.
If I were Facebook, I would want to block all politics. And the only news and politics I'd allow on the site are from preferred vendors. Because then you're still allowing politics on, but you're allowing safe news and information on the platform. And then people see their friends and family and their ex-girlfriends, and then, you know, then
and current girlfriends.
And, you know, I'm like, yeah, that's, and current girlfriends, yes. Like Tadster over here.
Exes, currents, all of them.
Baby mamas. How baby many baby mama? Mamas do you think he has?
Well, at least seven.
I don't know. It's hard to count.
I mean, he's a syndicated podcaster.
Right.
Owns his own ranch.
Right.
Stood
right.
up to the government.
Has an ice skating rink in the backyard.
It's pretty.
I have two wonderful puppies.
Well,
do you have two phones?
He does.
Yeah.
I just noticed that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I told you girlfriends.
Yeah, yeah, okay. That
you
makes
know,
sense,
you don't
want to.
Yeah.
And with that.
One's for drugs.
One for business. Oh, actually, they're both for pleasure.
Yeah, is one of them for business?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Okay. Right. That's the Tad. That's the Tad phone. Anybody puts a TAD signal out up in the sky here in Hendricks County.
You have to, work makes you keep your phone with you at all times?
Oh, yeah.
What?
No. Well, I mean, they don't have, I mean, I,
you just,
I no, I've it. Got everything on it. It's not like it's unlimited data, it's everything. So I,
he's so rich, Rob. His dogs have a bookshelf.
That's right.
They have
look at how
stuff.
Many, I have four copies by Season on the Brink for Bob
noticed,
Knight.
I noticed that, yeah.
I've gotten every book Bob Knight's ever written.
Now, I'm guessing the books up top are Pappy's.
Yeah, actually, the majority of them are.
Because it's all about Gettysburg and Civil War and
those are good
Indians.
Books. Yeah.
And then the shelf down below is yours. It's all sports books, auto racing,
and
understanding business, hypertension. Is that your book?
Yeah, I'm going to have to break that out because I threw my back out. At Topgolf earlier this morning, I'm going to have to read up on that. Tonight.
Hypertension, I think, is high blood pressure.
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm going to have to read the other one then.
Bill O'Reilly's A Bold, Fresh Piece of Humanity.
That's right. That's a good read. If you like humor.
Yeah. Good old Bill O'Reilly.
No, my Trump shrine is in the studio. It's all under plexiglass and put away.
All right. Well, I think we've lost Rob. I think we should start wrapping up because Rob looks like he's ready.
Well, let's wrap it up like a Christmas present.
Are you being called home?
No. I run several successful businesses, so it was just hard to get away.
You have a Lexus.
I have a Lexus that was smashed by a deer. Yes.
Yeah, I saw that, but yeah. Still,
what
a
was
Lexus.
The deer driving?
It was driving down 40. One deer missed the first one, never saw the second one.
I think really? drunk deers are a real problem in this county.
Well, and that deer paid the ultimate price.
Now, would you ever, you ran for office and served as an elected official?
Yeah, I won a lot of votes.
That's right.
Many votes. Almost all of them. Some would say
almost all the votes.
Some would say almost all.
Would you run again?
Oh, break it here.
Oh, boy.
Break it here.
Come on.
Throw your hat in the ring.
He's running for Senate. I can tell.
Come
not
on,
running for Senate.
Are you going to be the successor to Donald?
You know, part of me really would like to run against Governor Holcomb in 2020. Ooh. You know, do the LPs need a candidate?
I'm sure they do.
You know, yeah. I mean, would you guys run my campaign?
No.
I've got all the time in the world. I'll get three phones if I
meet my campaign manager Tad Western.
I do, and I've wanted to ask you this forever because you haven't really been on the show because you and I had a thing.
It was great.
It was
great for ratings.
Yeah, we
it was huge.
We fought. We and then you know the
I need a beef.
Rob is an only child, and so sometimes he takes his joking too far and got a little too personal. Are you an only child?
I am an only child.
Right in the feels.
It's funny how I knew that without knowing the answer. So you know we got a little sideways there for about a month. I didn't get invited to the wedding. Just had to watch.
You know why you didn't get invited to the wedding, right?
Why?
She was petrified you were going to meme the wedding.
It's probably a good call on her part.
I went to the mat for you and Lens over the...
Did he not get invited either same reason?
Very worried because of what you did at Hannah's wedding.
Oh,
it was
okay.
Your behavior at Hannah's wedding that dealt you in.
But see, I wouldn't do that to you guys.
I tried to explain that.
Hannah's just a pain in the
Trust
ass.
Trust me.
Right.
I tried many hours... to explain. I tried.
You realize that meme era, it really helped the show in some ways. It really hurt the show in others. I've had to do basically a year of digging out to regain my credibility after that period. But it was a lot of fun. But it kept me from getting invited to weddings, birthday parties. It was in court records and a friend's divorce.
It's just more meme time.
We are libertarians. Tad and Greg and I are in court divorce proceedings.
That's right. As Tad Western.
As Tad Western.
And I kept telling her, I said, look, honey, he would never do anything inappropriate. And I can assure you that they will both be very well behaved. And it just, I tried for months.
Here's the thing. Both Linz and I know social norms really well.
Yes.
We choose to break norms.
Yes.
But we know, like, I know when not to go too far. He knows when he's gone too far. I choose to stop before I go too far.
No brakes on the meme train.
Right. He rose from the dead. Nobody's heard from him in years at this point, but he posted a Hitler meme to Jeremiah's Facebook page the other day. So it was Lynn striking back.
It's really the great regret of my wedding is that you guys were not there.
Well, I appreciate that. But so you haven't been on in forever since our immigration fight.
Mm-hmm.
And I have not heard your opinion of Donald Trump as president. I want to hear what you think of the last, 700 days or so.
I think the country's in a good direction.
I'm shocked that you have positive things to say, Ron.
So what do you run on? You run on, I'm going to put constitutionally based judges who believe in the Constitution, that it's not a living, breathing document on the Supreme Court, has done that. I think even libertarians would look at guys like Gorsuch, who I've heard you say nice things about.
He wrote for Cato
at
one point.
And I think Kavanaugh is a good choice as well. So I think he's done that. I think that's a check. He said he'd do tax reform. He did it. Right. I think the tax cuts, putting the onus on the businesses, and saying we're going to give it to the business and let that trickle down that way was really bold. I think it was smart. I think it went well. I think he has not done a good job of getting the government under control. I think the spending is still totally out of control. I think he got snookered on the omnibus deal. I think he fails sometimes to unite because of his social media behavior.
Yeah.
From our business, it's awesome because every day I can read a Donald Trump tweet with Whitney Houston playing in the background.
When he said, I watched Barack Obama's speech, but I fell asleep. I howled when I saw that in Twitter.
It's a guy that still doesn't totally understand, and he does this a lot, that he's not, while he may be the CEO of America, he can't wave a magic wand and say, build a golf course or build a building or revamp a post office.
Yeah.
He needs the Congress to get things done, and he alienates people needlessly. And I think he gets so caught up in things that don't matter sometimes that it's taken a presidency. I would give him a B plus, A minus. I think if he had tried to unite the Republicans more so and let certain things go, I think he'd be doing much better. But on the key things that he has control over, he's done a pretty good job.
I think that if he had the self-control to delete Twitter from his phone and do it the way the presidents have done it in the past. And I know he thinks that that's how he got elected, by having that direct line to the people. You know, his rallies would be a bigger deal because that would be the only time that he'd be heard, really, because he doesn't talk to the press much. I think if he just shut up for 6 months and let the economy be the story, he would keep Congress, both houses.
You guys know this, right? I mean, once you've secured someone's vote, they can't vote for you twice unless you're in California. Right. And Rob Kendall's going to vote for Donald Trump. Like, everything now is just icing and gravy, and I can't tell any more people to vote for Trump. What you're doing, though, with these tweets and stuff is alienating that middle block who you really do need, who do like your policies. They don't like you.
There's a lot of people in our audience who probably would fit that description. It's like, I think, Tad, you voted for Gary Johnson, right?
Yeah, well, because I knew Trump was going to win Indiana. So.
Right. So, Tad's a guy who's sympathetic.
Yeah.
I think I went over his policies on the show, me and Greg did, and I was like, if he gets half this shit done that he says, I mean, if he sticks to this, this isn't a bad deal at all, really.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not perfect libertarian, and it's not as good as Gary, but it's a hell of a lot better than what Hillary was offering.
There's no policy since he's been president that has been accomplished because of Twitter.
That's exactly right. And there's a lot of stuff that's been ruined because of it.
Exactly. The campaign, the Twitter was great for campaigning. I thought it was awesome.
Yeah.
But I really thought he'd tone it down, and it's been to his detriment because people vote based on their current situation. And unfortunately, they vote a lot of times on how they judge you. And that's one of the things I told Trump when I interviewed him when we got done, because he was so nice and just totally different than what people see. I said, if people saw this side of you, they'd think totally different. But I think he's so sensitive to everything.
Yeah. Is it just the years of the New York media beating him up, and he's just...
I just think he looks at it as...
He's always ready to throw that counterpunch.
What's the worst that can happen to me is I'll go back to being a billionaire. I don't think he gives a shit. I don't think he cares.
And I think he makes the environment worse because people just hyperventilate so much that it builds up the other side to the point that it is... You know, he feels he needs to defend, and in the defense, he just makes that other side even more crazy. You know, and so so now you've got senators openly breaking Senate rules just to grandstand to be ridiculous.
And the pivot is so important, right? Because everybody in this room knows how they're voting. You know, and our friends for the most part, because we hang out with informed people. Even if we don't agree on opinions, we know what's going on. How do you move the people who start watching and deciding how they're going to vote the week before the election? The guy that's going to decide the Joe Donnelly race, that you know, run-of-the-mill... Maybe college educated, maybe not. How do you move that person to your side? You don't do it by Twitter. You don't do it by, you know, just making bizarre statements. You don't do it by talking about Robert Mueller every 3 hours. You do it by letting your policies talk for you. And Trump is not moving those people.
Yeah, I think he thinks that he can speak things into existence.
Yeah.
I think his ego is that big and he just can't. And it doesn't work that way. And no, you know, his pride ultimately is what will be his downfall.
It is. It's very, he is not Nixon. And I don't think he's a criminal, unlike Nixon, but it's very Nixonian in the paranoia, which is too bad because his policies have been pretty darn good. The regulation, I mean, on policies, regulation repeal, I'm sure you support. You like the judges. You know, the tax cuts should have had the spending cuts, but whatever. Those are all things he's campaigned on. He can't make Congress fund the wall. So from my perspective, he's done everything, but I'm already voting for him.
He's a lame duck president, even if he wins re-election.
Exactly.
And that's really the sad part, and that's sort of why Ben Sasse's comments in the Kavanaugh hearings the other day, I think, hit so hard.
That's what I was watching when Rob got here.
Yeah, I think it like the Sasse comments about how Washington actually works now, and everybody goes, yeah, let's get back to the bill singing on the steps of the Congress, Schoolhouse Rock, you know, and we don't recognize the legislation the way that we were taught it in school. And so it makes no sense to us. And the sad part is that, well, maybe the good part, I mean, complete intraction and complete failure to do big things at the presidential and congressional levels doesn't really make me all that mad, you know, but at the same time, it's like, you're still going to have to pass big laws to repeal things.
And the problem becomes like what we saw in the Republican primary for Senate this year. And I know we talked a lot about this because I thought Todd Rokita was going to be a great candidate. I mean, a great background, was a great Secretary of State, was very friendly to the libertarians.
Absolutely.
Tried to actually do the right stuff on redistricting. And I thought, wow, this guy's going to be a great candidate. But it became this obsession over who's Trump's biggest bosom buddy, and it made them all awful candidates. Yep. Yeah. Because now that doesn't help Mike Braun. Now that doesn't move Mike Braun past Joe Donnelly because you've totally wed yourself to Donald Trump, which doesn't get you to 50% plus one. So.
Yeah, even in Indiana.
Yep.
Yep. All right, well, let's start wrapping up. At the end, we do shameless self-promotion. We cover whatever we may have missed during the show. Tad, why don't you start us off?
I'm a humble man. I don't like to brag or plug anything, but if you insist, I will. Thanks for coming over.
Thanks
for coming over, Rob. No problem. Anytime you want. Anytime you need to get out here to Hendricks County.
And, tomorrow's my birthday.
Tomorrow's your birthday?
I'm meeting the family tonight in a couple hours over at this Italian place, and Rob lives on this side of town. I was like, let's do it at the ranch.
Your mother was very mean to you in planning your birthday dinner.
My mom called me a bitch.
You were bitching because you didn't have enough candles on the cake.
That's right. Yes, that's right. I don't want a 3 and a 5 candle. I want 35 candles.
And she said, damn it, the cake isn't big enough.
You got to get a bigger cake.
This is my writer.
You have the writer.
As we always do, Chris, you know, when I appear on We Are Libertarians, I offer you a sizable donation because I do enjoy the podcast. I do listen to Tad Talk. I do listen to We Are Libertarians every week. I'm going to start listening to the Chris Spangle show as well.
Please, yes.
So once we're done here, I'll be making this sizable $10 donation to We Are Libertarians.
Oh, wow.
It's not Christy Avery level, but, you know.
I all I ask is that half of that be in Bruce's name.
Yes, half of this is from Bruce Kendall, who surfaced yesterday.
He's a good boy.
Yes, he's
he
great.
He is a good boy.
Yeah,
always
I was worried about your dog, Bruce. He has his own social media channels.
Yeah, he's going to get more active now. He told
right.
me the other day.
Good, yeah. See, the thing about Bruce is that Bruce is not like your typical dog Instagram.
Yeah.
You know, Bruce has a personality of its own, and he's a little Winston Churchill-y.
Yeah.
You know, he looks like him. He speaks like him. He's very, I like that. But thank you for the donation.
Yes, so thank you for letting me come, and thank you, Tad, for hosting us
no
at the
problem.
Ranch.
Anytime. It's good to see you, Rob. And I mean, I'm just gonna go ahead and plug Tad Talk. If you guys like what you hear from me, or obviously me, I'm the only one on Tad Talk. Occasionally, I have a guest, Kona Pooh Bear. Every once in a while, you'll get to hear them chirp in.
I enjoy the stories because Tad Talk is part Tad's life and then part like news, breaking down the news of the day.
It's pretty much a pod documentary.
Yeah.
Podimentary, I guess we could call it.
The things that Kona humps and the things that Pooh Bear pisses on is part of my favorite.
Yeah, I accidentally locked Pooh Bear in the spare bedroom and she peed all over everything. But it's, you know, we got washing machines and right. plenty of detergent for stuff like that. But if you want to listen to Tad Talk, I do it about 4 or 5 times a week. And 30 minutes or so on local, or not local, but current news events, and try to write some comedy bits too, but most of the time those don't come out that funny.
It's a very funny show, and it's one of those shows that it's, you know, like I listen to a lot of shows. Some shows, and I think We Are Libertarians is kind of this way sometimes, you got to pay attention because you might miss something. Whereas, like, Tad Talk is just kind of like a fun listen, and, you know, you're doing
it's easy listening. Yeah. It's pretty much elevator music. It's elevator pod.
No, it's what but we it's like funny, call it. And you don't talk about, like, you know, all kinds
nothing
of
heavy. I try to stay out of politics on my podcast, unless it's, you know, shitting on John McCain's funeral.
What's the weirdest story you covered this week?
I had a great story. You guys should go listen to it. I think it's in the title, but a meth head actually fornicated with a beaver.
Yeah.
And that was the headline. I read it, and then the beaver had been struck by a car.
Oh.
And a woman had got out of her car and wrapped it up in a blanket, and then she went to leave and came back.
She was trying to get some help. She was trying to get something to carry. We'd covered this story on Chicks on the Right.
Yeah, and
forget the crackhead, or was she the crackhead?
I have no idea. This story, I thought it was fake news, but I read it anyway. I was like, this is too good. And so she came back, and the guy was apparently effing this beaver to death. And the best part was, the last line of the story was, the beaver was later deceased. So the beaver ended up dying.
Right, at least it was warm.
Yeah. I don't know.
Rob.
That was a pretty good story.
At Rob M. Kendall on Twitter. Catch me on WIBC as well. Chris, thank you for the amazing experience.
Yes, thank you for having me on. All right, thank you to everybody for listening to We Are Libertarians. Thank you for listening to Tad Talk and
thank
the
you.
Chris Spangle Show and Brian Nichols Show and the Boss Hog of Liberty and Upward and all the other We Are Libertarians Network shows. Fundamental Freedoms, which every Sunday night you can see a new fundamental video on the basics of libertarianism with Sarah Brady Wagner. So, all right, thanks for joining us here on We Are Libertarians, and we'll see you next week. Pew, pew, pew.